Last week, I offered a definition, not just last week, the last couple of weeks, but last week in particular, we offered a definition of man as being the importance of man, the kedusha in the world, the value of man was in that he is developing. That raises the obvious question, developing to what? What is the point of developing? So the answer I gave last week, which is not a helpful answer, is that man develops to be God. That explains why it's kedusha. That explains why it's value. But it doesn't explain what the particular content is. Which raises the question of ta'amei ha-mitzvot. What are the actual goals of the way man is supposed to behave, of we call mitzvot? What is the purpose? What is the tachlit? What is the end result? What is the goal as defined for what we call in general Torah mitzvot? This is a famous topic in the Middle Ages, discussed extensively by all the Rishonim. They will give different answers, different particular answers, different specific answers. The first thing that we have to realize is that all Rishonim, this is unfair in a similar sense to the last time I said all Rishonim about 6 or 7 weeks ago, all Rishonim who actually wrote books about Tamei mitzvot agree that there are Tamei mitzvot, which is all the Rishonim that we know about. So presumably there might have been, undoubtedly probably were, some Jewish thinkers or Jewish people, who I think might be too audacious here. There might have been some Jewish people who said that, no, you do mitzvot because God told you to do them and they have no purpose. So the Rambam, obviously there were people like that. That's why the Rambam had to conduct a polemic against such an opinion. The Rambam devoted a number, 5, 6, 7 chapters of Chelek Gimel of Maor Nebuchim, specifically against the idea that God tells you what to do because God tells you what to do. We mentioned the basic idea, it was a slightly different context, but the basic idea when we talked about the beginning of Hashgacha a long time ago, the Rambam quotes in terms of the reason of Hashgacha, the third day of Hashgacha was the opinion of the Asharia, who when you ask, they wasn't talking about mitzvot, talking about other things, but it's the same thing. Why does God do X? The answer is Vitzono, because that's his will. The Rambam thought that was something which you cannot say in Yiddishkeit. And the same thing applies to mitzvot as well. But I think in mitzvot, maybe we've heard it a little bit more often. Why does God say that you should do A, B, or C? Why is it usher to wear shatnez? Or why do you have to wear tefillin? Because God said so. And what's the value in being mekayim a mitzvah? The value is doing that which God says. The Rambam specifically has a whole polemic against it, but interestingly enough, in a rather relatively short portion in the Ramban on the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKan, the Ramban quotes the Rambam and he says he's disagreeing, but basically he agrees. He disagrees with a little fine point here and there. The Ramban says, of course, obviously every mitzvah has a reason, and the reason is a positive value. The reason isn't only to have God exercise his will. And basically all Rishonim agree to that. Then when you get down to there are 613 mitzvot, so you get down as to what is the ta'ama mitzvah, what is the purpose of Shabbat, what is the purpose of Tefillin, what is the purpose of Shatnez, Arayot, etc., etc. So you can have a lot of opinions there. And that, I mean, there are really a lot of opinions. You can have endless numbers of opinions in the particulars. But there are three different levels here. In super theory, everyone agrees that there is something that we're being aimed at. In the details, there are dozens of opinions. In structure, in shitot, in like what is the basic structure of the goal, without going into the exact details, so there are a limited number of opinions, and we're going to address some of those opinions and to see more or less how they express themselves in Torah mitzvot. Before that, a little bit of an introduction. The question that we're discussing is part of, or it's relevant to a major question, probably the most important question in theology at all. Not the most pressing question. The most pressing question in theology is what we talked about 2 and 3, 4 weeks ago, the problem of evil. Because that you have to answer unless you feel terrible. But this is actually a more important question. And the question is, on what is the basis for a relationship between man and God? This question only arises in what we call modern religions, meaning Yiddishkeit. By modern, I don't mean like modern. I mean, you know, 3,000 years modern, as opposed to 6,000 years modern. Or higher religions, or in other words, monotheistic religions. All the Abadazara don't have the problem, because the relationship between man and the gods is like the relationship between man and man. The gods aren't all that different. There's no essential question as to how man can relate to God, how God can relate to man, when the gods are just, the relationship to you is like your relationship to dogs or cats. There's nothing intrinsically impossible there. But once you have, and this is what we talked about in the very, very beginning of this series, you have the definition of God as being wholly other, as being totally above, as being totally different, as being totally spiritual, as being absolute, then the question is, on what basis can there be a relationship between man and God? And that's a super important question. That's just theology. It's an important question in religious life. All theories, all religions, but something more importantly, I think all religious people, you might not be conscious of the fact that you're struggling with this problem, but you are. One of my jobs will be to explain to you how troubled you are, what a difficult life you've been having since your bar mitzvah. For those of you who have a happy-go-lucky attitude towards your relationship with God. And it's extremely difficult for people to actually live with, not just to explain theoretically, but to live with the fact that they're expected in their religious life to have a relationship with God, because he's unknowable, unseen, undefinable, basically, has no particular traits which are found, which I can relate to because I have the same kind of traits. Whether you go into the Rambam's extreme negation of the traits of God, that there's nothing similar between you and God, that's a bit of extreme, but if you find some sorts of combinations, but it's not similar to any other kind of relationship, simply because of the fact that, to put it simply, God is in heaven and you're on earth. This is the way many, many Rishonim explain the problem of Chet HaEgel. And I'm explaining, Chet HaEgel wasn't a theological problem. It wasn't that there were a bunch of philosophers in the Midbar who said, what's the basis for explaining how the absolute can relate to the relative? If they would say it in Greek-tinged English. Or, what's the relationship for how the totally spiritual can relate to the physical? If they would have said it in somewhat more Jewish language. They weren't philosophers, but they just had to do it. They just had to get up in the morning and have a relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, who wasn't there, who you couldn't see, who was someplace up on Har Sinai at the best. And many, even Rishonim, it's more common in Achronim, explained that was the problem of Chet HaEgel. They didn't deny that God existed, they just couldn't relate to him, they needed something else, and something else would be an idol. So before I said that idol worshippers don't have the problem, there's another theory that says they have the problem, they've just solved it. In other words, idol worshippers believe in a God like ours, but they just don't pay attention to it because he's not the working God. So therefore, all the other things, all the psalim, all the idols and icons, etc., are the intermediaries between human beings and God. The question of the intermediary is a very, very basic question. When I say that it's true for everybody in the room, you have to do a little bit of thinking, but I think you'll realize it. So we don't look for idols. There's nobody in the room who's even had a havamina of, very few people in the room have even had a havamina of actually giving a godly quality, worshipping in some sense something which is physical. The reason I took it back, I wasn't just being funny, I took it back because, you know, you probably have had a little bit of a havamina, because we're surrounded by, I mean, in Yiddishkeit, and from Yiddishkeit, we're surrounded by things which are getting very close to that. You know, like the Kotel. Like, you know, like you need things. Maybe like a Sefer Torah. I mean, you know, like we talk about Kedusha, and it's much easier to kiss the Kotel than it is to have a loving relationship with God. So that's why I took back my Havamina. There is a Havamina. Probably many of you had Havaminas. But you know, you've struggled successfully with it. Let's put it that way. But that doesn't mean the problem doesn't exist. And the most noticeable place where it exists is when you actually actively have to relate to God, namely in tefillah. And how well or poorly do you daven, and what do you do to overcome the problem, the basic problem of poor tefillah, meaning that you think you're davening to the wall. You feel that you're davening to the wall. It is believe it or not, Zumi, none of you ever tried it, but in fact, it's very easy to dive into a stone idol. Even though you know it's stone. Of course you know it's stone. Yeshayahu Navi says that the people of the Avazar are fools because they take a piece of wood, half they cut and they make it to charcoal to make their bread, and the other half they bed down to. Isn't that ridiculous? Of course it's ridiculous. No one ever really thought that the piece of stone was God. But the fact is that all you need is a little bit of imagination to see the stone as an in-between, as a conduit, as a doorway to God. But if you're facing nothing, it's very, very difficult. I personally have that experience, not in davening, but not with God. I'll just give you an example. One of the things which I do in yeshiva is I give shiurim to nobody. I give shiurim to these machines, but anybody in the room. And it's very difficult. It's like when you call up somebody and you get the message on their answering machine, and then you have to say something. So you know how you sound because you feel like an idiot. Saying, I called. You can't talk to nobody. It's very difficult. But that's what you sound like when you're davening. The way you get over it is by one saying with a niggun. This is a recommendation. The Sefer Hasidim says you should daven with a niggun. It doesn't say why, but I think that's the reason why. If you daven with a niggun, you won't pay attention to, you won't stutter as much as if you just have to say, God, can you hear me? You just don't believe it. But if you have a stick, one of the ways that I personally overcame my necessity to say shiurim to a tape recorder, I have a very good imagination. So I have a very good imagination. So I populate the room that I'm in. I don't actually need the statues. I have an overly active imagination. I sit in Cheder Amsterdam downstairs. There's a table there. And as far as I'm concerned, all the chairs around the table have real human beings. They don't talk to me. They don't ask questions. But that's okay. In shiur, nobody asks me questions anyhow. For me, that's good enough to give a shiur. But I have seen some of my other people who I've asked to give a shiur there. And I sit in there in the room there. And I just watch them disintegrate trying to say shiur to an empty room. Davening is the same thing. So you could either, instead of davening to God, you could daven to a piece of wood, or to a person, or to a kever. Here we're getting closer to what Jews sometimes do. It's not that hard to find people who really they don't believe. They believe that God is in the heaven and the kever is nothing. But they will get more emotional. You will see a better tefillah if you put them next to a kever of some tzaddik who they never heard of, than if they have to stand in an empty shul and dive into chas v'shalom, dive into nobody. I mean, I don't mean dive into nobody, but yes, dive into nobody who you can see. That's an existential problem, not a theological problem. Theologically, how is this problem solved in general? So there's one very famous religion, which some of you may have heard of, which solved the problem not by chas v'shalom having statues, because that's ridiculous. That doesn't make any sense at all. But they solved the problem by claiming, without serious philosophical justification, that God is a man, and therefore, don't try. And this is the actual recommendation: don't try to daven or to spend too much time talking to God, but you can talk to that form of God, which was just like you. He walked the earth. He walked on water. He stilled the waters. And that solved the problem, and which is why Christianity is a very popular religion, because it manages, with philosophic unclarity, to both claim that God is absolute, immaterial, beyond the world and everything else, and also that He bleeds just like you and me. And that is the link, that is the intermediary between the concept of God, the real God, and man. And we shouldn't. Lizalzel, we shouldn't belittle the cleverness, the usefulness, the power behind this kind of image. First of all, we shouldn't belittle it because, you know, 500 million people is an impressive amount of converts over 2,000 years. We don't do as well. And two, it engendered a great deal of complicated theological deliberations, and it really does allow people to daven. You know, if you ever seen on one of those channels, depending on where you live, one of those really good channels on television, if you've seen a serious prayer service somewhere in Texas or Alabama, I don't think it happens in New York often, but maybe there. Those people are really davening. I mean, you know, they're really pouring it out. And the reason was because they know who they're davening to. They're not davening to Achein Ata Kel 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 Mistate. How does Judaism solve the problem other than saying tough luck, work harder? Because psychologically, I could just tell you to work at it. But theologically, there's a real problem here. How, in fact, can there be a relationship between man and God? On the basis of what? I know my relationship with my wife is, I know my relationship with my brother is, I know my relationship with my pet dog is. I mean, we have things in common and we do them together. But what do you do exactly? On what basis is your relationship with God? So there are two answers, I think, in Yiddishkeit. And they don't contradict each other. I want to talk about the second, but the first one we already have spoken about. The concept that I described of Tzedem Elohim is the Jewish answer in terms of theory. How is it possible for man to relate to God? And you'll notice the similarity between this and Christianity, as well as the very, very important difference. The answer is there has to be something that can be both God and man at the same time. And what Christians do is they say, it's not me, it's not God, it's the third person. And we just say, he's man and God at the same time. The advantage, and I say this with great pride, the advantage philosophically, as well as existentially, of Yiddishkeit over Christianity is that the something which is both man and God at the same time is every one of us. Since that's impossible, that's ridiculous, the answer is the way I've described it in the last few weeks. What does it mean that you are God at the same time that you're man? You're God in a infinite potential manner. You're never actually God. That's about Azara. That would be Christianity if you talked about yourself as being that way. But you are God-like. You're able to have a relationship with God because you were created B'Tzelem Elohim. That's your present. Your present state is potentially future God. Which is what I tried at length to describe last week, and it came up a number of times in the past. So if you really want to know, just without us doing anything, without davening, without doing mitzvahs, we'll talk about mitzvahs in a second, but just like, if I'm standing here, so what is between us? The answer is what is between us is that sulam, the it's not theory, it's actually existent, but it's potentially existent. Potential really exists. It's the ladder which directly links me to God, even though the ladder is infinitely long. You'll never actually get to the top of the ladder, but the ladder exists. Because the ladder is that you were created B'Tzelem Elohim. Which, if you'd like a drasha, that is one very good pshat, but not the only pshat, to Sulam Yaakov. Hu mutzav arza, v'roshom magi ha-shamayim, v'malachei Elohim yodim v'olim bo. The feet are in the ground, the head is, v'ashamayim v'nei Elohim nitzav alav, the head is liyad Elohim, Elohim nitzav alav, and malachei Elohim olim v'yodim bo. The connection is made because you can go up or down. Hopefully you're going up. But you can go up and down. The ability to go up and down is the connection. Heavens, that's what the picture says. The heavens and earth are connected by a ladder. That is the meaning of, that is a meaning to other Perushim, many other Perushim, to Sulam Yaakov. So that's the first answer. And that goes back to what we said in the past. The second answer, which is the practical answer, rather than the theoretical answer, and there are two separate answers. The second answer is Torah. Torah in Yiddishkeit serves the purpose of being something which is not literally God, not man, but both, or in between at the same time. It's lo bashamayim, so it does exist on earth. It's a real thing. It's a real book. It has real content. The content is about us, and yet we define it as being dvar Elokim. We define it as being not just something created by God, because everything is created by God, but as being of God. Chokhmato shel Elokim, dvar Elokim. Alpaim Shana Lifnation of Baalam, it precedes the world, it precedes creation. It's not a matter of years. It precedes creation because it's not created in the same sense that the world is created. And that is the purpose of Torah. So we're going to try to discuss how that goes back to what I saw today. That's Tamei Mitzvot. In other words, Torah exists to allow a person, to give a person the derech, how to develop. I'm not changing my definition. What is development? It's Ad Kisei HaKavod. Your goal of development is God. So what's the Shita? What is the thing which gets me to develop towards God? The answer is Torah. How can Torah do that? Because Torah is holding on to both sides of the equation at the same time. This is the reason why, and not for practical reasons, this is the reason why Torah Min HaShamayim is the Yisod in Yiddishkeit. It's not because If those Naman HaShemayim, so maybe this is wrong, or maybe this is not perfect. Because for that, the answer which the official, almost official answer of conservative Judaism would be okay. Okay, it's Naman HaShemayim, but it's wonderful. I mean, you could be highly divine inspired. I've had brilliant ideas in my time, which I think are true. And they're not Naman HaShemayim, they're merely divinely inspired. I had an inspiration. I woke up in the morning and it occurred to me, I have a really interesting theory as to why the Rambam said that Eidei Mesir Kati Bizei Dechati Makati. That was divine inspiration. But it could be wrong, it could be right, it's probably right, I think it's right. You can live your life that way. Millions of people live their lives with very, very inspired teachings which make them better people. But if we're not really interested in being a better person, if you're interested in being v'yitam kelohim yodei tov v'ra, if the only goal which is worthwhile, everything else is meaningless. The only goal which gives meaning to the fact that you want to be better, not because you want to be better, because you want to be perfect, then the shita has to be min Hashem, because it has to describe God. It has to be, this is the ideal. The ideal is to be like God. So it has to be of God and not merely very, very intelligent, very, very brilliant, very, very wonderful, etc., etc., etc. And the Torah min HaShemayim, meaning that the Torah is does not reflect human intelligence, but appeals to human intelligence, is necessary for the entire theory which we've been developing, which I'm trying to develop now. I'll give one analogy, or one nafkamina, which is very, very, also very, very halacha lemaisa. Very often we're told, or we feel, or we've been told by our teachers, or told by our parents, that, or we've been told by the modern world, it's a very big yisod in the modern Western world, that a person should be authentic. A person should express himself. You should, you shouldn't tell lies, you should tell the truth, the way you feel, get it all out. If a person expresses his innermost true feelings, so that's a value. Sometimes people fake it. They describe what they should feel. All right, that's bad. The first thing is good. We use that sometimes as a measure of authenticity. If I can really relate to this, it really reflects who I am, so that's real. But if you ask me to express something which doesn't come out of my heart, so that by definition is not me, and therefore it doesn't have any value. I don't think he invented it, but on the cusp of the modern world, so there's a line in Shakespeare from Hamlet, above all things, thyself be true. That's like a real, really, really big sisma in modern ethics. So Yiddishkeit is based on the opposite. There's nothing wrong with being value hypocritical in Judaism. There's something very wrong with being value totally authentic in Yiddishkeit. If you only express what is true for you, then based on what I said I think 2 weeks ago, then you're dead. The rock expresses being a rock. Dogs express being dogs. Human beings are meant to express being God, which they're not. So the true thing that you're supposed to express is the next step, the next thing ahead of you. And that's why Torah is always ahead of you. It's never, you're never supposed to actually feel, wow, this is mamish me. You know, I can read a play by somebody, a play by Shakespeare, and say, wow, that's really me. But if you can read Torah and say, that's really me, then there's something wrong with you. I mean, it means you didn't understand what you were reading. You can say, I can see the basis here, I can see because how it starts for me, but the actual message is meant to be a little bit ahead of you. Actually, it's meant to be infinitely ahead of you, but the part that you can sort of understand, remember the helix that I described once, so you can grasp the slightly step ahead of you, that's what Torah is telling you now. And if it's simply, no, this is the way I feel, you know, Shabbos is me, once a week I should feel that I should, you know, like I like Shabbos, it's beautiful, then there's nothing left for Shabbos to offer you, and that can't be, because Shabbos is, like every other mitzvah, Shabbos is God, Shabbos is eternal. Again, that's why Torah is min HaShemayim. It's not the best of human beings, it's the best of God, which is the best of human beings. That's not the best of any actual human being. It's the best of God, which is the best of all human beings, beyond and above where they are at this given moment. Practically speaking, the debate, the problem of Torah Min HaShemayim is a very pressing problem, because you know we have kashas at this pasuk, at that pasuk, and kashas are okay. It all depends what you're convinced of. If you know in advance, which is a matter of emuna and kabbalah, that the Torah Min HaShemayim, so you take your kashas with a grain of salt. I mean, there's nothing wrong with we spoke about this in the past. There's nothing wrong with applying human logic, human ethics, to a pasuk in the Torah. If you find it very difficult to believe that God commanded that we should kill every man, woman, and child in Midian, in Pashat Pinchas, that's a good kasha. I don't think there's anything wrong with asking that kasha. If it doesn't make any sense to you in terms of your logic, then you have what we had, what Avraham Avinu said to Kadosh Baruch Hu, because lo yaseh mishpat. If you derive from that apparently that particular parasha was written by perhaps inspired, but nonetheless human bunch of bloodthirsty savages 4,000 years ago. One time when I was a Tamani yeshiva, so as any great yeshiva in a great city, as happens, yeshivas are magnets for people who need to express themselves. And a gentleman appeared on the street, on 185th Street, between Amsterdam Avenue and Audubon Avenue, with a sign, just like in the cartoons. He had a big sign, and his point was that he felt that L'chvod HaTorah, he it was very important that we should take out that Pasha from the Torah, because Pasha Midian was obviously not written by God. The rest of it he thought was really good, but Pasha Midian was not written by God, and he gave out pamphlets and he tried to convince him. He actually entered the Rav Shir, didn't last long, and there's a problem with Pasha Midian, I agree. So if you know in advance, but the point is like this, is it inherently impossible that there are Pashiyot which I don't understand? No, I think it's inherently impossible that you understand all the Pashiyot. I think it's inherently impossible that you understand fully any Pashiyot. You don't understand fully the first word in Bereshit, and I'm not talking Kabbalah now, I mean because there's this depth there that we don't understand. The depth that you don't understand is the Pshat. You can't possibly understand everything about any mitzvah in the Torah, because the mitzvah are not addressing you as you are. They're addressing you as you should be, which is something that's beyond your present understanding. Your present situation. Your present comfortable understanding. At most, and this is the miracle of being a Tzelem Elokim, you can understand one step ahead. We talked about Avraham Avinu and the Akedah. So there was a logical problem there, which I still be solved by saying the word Tzelem Elokim, is how does a person become better than he is? In other words, Avraham Avinu before the Akedah, says of Chasda Kreskas, is not yet on the daga of Yirat Hashem of being an okay. When does he become a Yirei Hashem of someone who sacrifices his own son? Only afterwards. Then how did he do it? The answer is, you're able to pull yourself up a little bit by the bootstrap. You don't actually exist over here, you exist over here, and therefore the next step is in your power, even though it's not in your power. You can jump one inch above your own height. So the same thing is true for understanding. Like we can, I understand the next stage of understanding in a mitzvah. Well, if I do a mitzvah, it appeals to my next level of Shmirah Shabbos, my next level of accepting Kedusha. But it's the next level. Two levels, three levels ahead, I may not understand at all. I don't even begin to understand what I don't understand. But since the path is infinite, you're being dragged up by Torah to Ad Hashem Yitbarach. So at every step you take, you opens up a vista for the next step. I go back to my major point here. It's inherently necessary for Torah to be Min HaShemayim, or else, not that it wouldn't be a good system. Everyone knows there are a lot of good things. Maybe even everything in Torah is good, but it wouldn't be serving the purpose that I'm describing now. If the purpose of Torah is to be the Gesher, to be the Sulam between you and God, that it has to start from God. It has to be godly in its content, not just that God created. It has to express a content which is God, because the Torah is the thing that is going to be what I am. So now, practically speaking, part of God, this is not, I don't think it's essentially pressing, but it might be important for the more intellectual of us. We really have to try to understand those portions of Torah which I really don't understand. Not that I say, oh, I don't understand fully, but they epitome be a kasha or difficulty or a stira to something which I think is true. So you have to, try to deal with that in order to convince yourself that that you're heading in the right direction, because otherwise you will have a problem. So you're bringing a proof to what I said.
I'm saying that
you're saying the main thing is the Torah, you don't understand.
There's no cars in the Torah. It seems like they're going to a very certain generation. And then afterwards, and it's turning to them in their own words. And not something godly that would ever be.
I thank you for supporting what I said. I know you didn't plan to do that. I thank you for supporting what I said. You're pointing out that there are a number, maybe less, maybe more. The number isn't important here. There are a number of things which are different points in my life, different for different people. By the way, the list you gave is an interesting list because it affects some people, not others, which I think proves my point. It's not that there are things which are shtuyot in the Torah, chas v'shalom. It's not that there are things which are wrong. There are things which, their relevance as a value, like what are they calling me to do or to be, does not appear to be relevant. In other words, I don't see at my present, in my attempt to be a spiritual and religious individual, I don't see why this is a value for me. What it offers me, to put it in very simple Western me first kind of terms. Like, you know, my yesh b'zeh b'shvili, what does this have to offer me? At least some of the mitzvahs. Some people like Shabbos, some people like Pesach, some people like Hanukkah, some people like dreidel, but very few people, for instance, like Shabbos. I say like Shabbos, you know. I would find it difficult to describe how observing Shabbos has changed my life. It's very difficult to explain how something you've never done and you've avoided has changed your life, because you have nothing to compare it to. But even using my great imagination, if I had worn Shabbos for the last 10 years, how would I be different? How would I be closer to God? I find it very difficult to give an answer. That's a less dramatic and less pressing question than whether or not slavery and freedom is a value in the Torah. But so I agree. There's some things are more relevant, some things are less relevant. To you, maybe to us, maybe to the Dor. But if the whole thing is not Dvar Hashem, then even the parts that are relevant are only relevant because, not because they're better, but because they're worse. Now, if something would be totally relevant, my point is like this: if something is totally relevant for you, then by definition, it's not divine. Then it's just you. And when I'm hungry, so a piece of bread is relevant to me. That's because what am I? Because I'm hungry. Bread and my energy are the same thing. So I need to keep feeding the bread to stay in the same place. I need to keep eating in order to stay in the same place. That's how I know that bread is relevant. That's why I feel very, very hungry. We're never quite that hungry for the next stage, which is why when you are physically hungry, you have no patience at all for spiritual development, because the present always takes precedence over the future. Yiddishkeit is not about who you are, it's about who you should be. As to what practically you should be doing, the answer is practically you should be doing Tayag Mitzvahs. And which one of them will actually have an effect on you? That's between you and God. To give another example, not in a Torah context, not in a Torah Tayag Mitzvahs context. Avraham Avinu, again, was called to the Akedah. Why was he called to the Akedah then and not before? Why was he called to the Akedah then and not tomorrow? So, there's a Sfas Emes, very, very, I think, sharp Sfas Emes. It has a particular interpretation of what the word Yirat Hashem means, which I'm not trying to sell right now, but the idea is good in any event. Whether or not, because what is Yirat Hashem, what is Avat Hashem, is a very, very complicated question. But the Pasuk says, Avraham Avinu, Ata Yadati Ki Yirei Elokim Ata. Now I know, after the Akedah, that you are a Yirei Elokim. If you don't think twice, and I would ask you, like, what qualities of Avraham Avinu evincing when he goes up to Hamariah, you wouldn't say Yirat Elokim. You would probably say Avat Elokim. The Rambam, who is, you know, not your average second-rate thinker, the Rambam writes, actually, when talking about what is the purpose of the Akedah, what does the Akedah teach us? So he says it teaches us two things. One I mentioned a few weeks ago, it teaches us that the Nevuah is self-certifying. And the other one he says, just what he says, I'm just quoting, it teaches us the limits of Avat Hashem. how much you have to love God, even sacrificing your son. It's against the pasuk. The pasuk says Yirat Hashem. So the Sfatemet gives a definition of Yirat Hashem and Avat Hashem, which goes like this. I'll say it very quickly. It's not very important. It says Avat Hashem means that which you do because you really understand why it's good. You actually love it. It's just Avat Hashem. It's Avat HaTochen. You know it's a value. You feel that it's enriching your life. You feel it makes a difference to you. Yirat Hashem is things which, if it was up to you, you wouldn't agree with. You don't get, there's no feedback. There's no charge. There's no surcharge. You do it only because God commanded and you obey God. Avraham Avinu, says the Sfat Emet, had a problem. His problem was that he was too good. Everything that he was supposed to do, he did mitoch ava. That's as expressed by the Medrash that says the Shtei Kiliyotav Novoto. How does Avraham Avinu know what the Torah said? Avraham Avinu came at Kol Torah Kula. Avraham Avinu observed the entire Torah. How did he do that? God didn't tell him the mitzvah. The answer was his klayot. Klayot in Chazal is beyond the brain. The klayot is not what you think; it's where you feel the truth. His kidneys simply poured out Torah into him. He knew it was true. He knew it was a good thing to do. A lot was captured. He gathered up the soldiers, chased after him. Everything Avraham Avinu did, he knew that it was a good thing. Tado ava. And therefore, on the basis of the theory that I expressed last 2 weeks ago, that which you never do, you don't inculcate as a midah, achrei ha-masim olei chalev, since Avraham Avinu had never done anything mitoch yirat Hashem, therefore he had zero yirat Hashem. Chasid Kreskas merely said that he had less avat Hashem than he needed to be a okay, and therefore he got more avat yirat Hashem. But the Sfat Emet, being a chassid Rebbe, it's mutter for him to exaggerate. The Sfat Emet says Avraham Avinu had zero yirat Hashem. I have much more yirat Hashem than Avraham Avinu had before that, because I, as I pointed out a few weeks ago, I express my yirat Hashem every morning. Well, most mornings, when I get out of bed and go to shul, I just do it because God told me to do it. But Avraham Avinu used to jump out of bed and run. Vayashkem Avraham Avokeh. He used to take off like he was in love with shul. He was in love with everything. So there was no Yirat Hashem in his personal experience. So God had to give him an experience which would inculcate Yirat Hashem. What was the only experience, the only kind of experience that God could give Avraham Avinu which would inculcate Yirat Hashem? Something which would make no sense, even to a spiritually developed and sensitive person like Avraham Avinu. For instance, that he should kill his own son. If he told him anything which had any meaning whatsoever, Avraham Avinu would have agreed too willingly. We needed something which he would only agree only because God commanded him. If I tell you that, the Kreelo Kimata. And what that is an example of, why am I mentioning this? I remember now. Why am I mentioning this? That's an example of the fact that he has a level of hashkacha, that a person Bahashkacha gets the Nisayon, which is his next step. Avraham Avinu had reached a point where there was a dangerous imbalance between his Avat Hashem and Yirat Hashem. So God arranges for him a Nisayon, which is his next step. The same thing is true of mitzvot. There's a famous Musavot that says that every person has one mitzvah which is his mitzvah. We're all chayim in Tayag mitzvot. But that doesn't mean we're all affected by Tayag mitzvot the same way. Based on who you are, your soul, your psychology, maybe where you are at a given time of your life. So this mitzvah is more important. What does it mean more important? It has no halachic ramifications. It doesn't mean you should do that and not do others. But the mitzvah which is actually going to make a difference to you is this particular mitzvah. So it could be that Shabbos is not the mitzvah that most of us are waiting for. You have to do it anyhow. But at a given point in your life, or maybe you as opposed to me, or is our door as opposed to a different door, this person is his ish of tzitzis. This person is ish chesed. This person is ish Torah. It means that's what his soul needs to, not to be, but to become. It's the next step in his journey. There are a lot of mitzvahs in the Torah. The theory says that in order to be a perfect individual, you need all 613. Since our immediate problem is not to be perfect, but only to be more perfect than yesterday, so as it turns out, this mitzvah is the one which one Bahashkacha came to me, because not all mitzvahs apply at any given moment. You have to have an incident. If someone knocks on the door and asks for tzedakah, then it's tzedakah time. If nobody knocks on the door and asks for tzedakah, you may not have to, may not be important to go look for somebody. Some people do look for somebody. But if God sends the Ani to your door, I think it's legitimate to speak that way. The Ani thinks he came on his own, but we know that God sent him. If God sends the Ani to the door, it's because it's for you. Give a little more tzedakah than yesterday time. If you're walking in the street and there's a fire, it's jump into the fire and save somebody's cat time, or baby, or whatever. And if you're in the Beis Medrash and somebody comes to you and says, it's raining outside and he left his coat there and he can't go to get it himself, maybe, sometimes it's complicated, maybe it's time to Bitul Torah, go save the guy's coat time. Or maybe it's the other way around. Maybe it's tell him coats don't make a difference, it's Talmud Torah time, and that's what I need for myself. Sometimes it's difficult to know what the answer is. So the Hashkacha relate. Hashkacha isn't only the Akedah. Hashkacha also tells you which mitzvot are today. Everybody in this room, presumably, Hashkacha has said to him, I say presumably because I might be wrong, but presumably everybody in this room, Hashkacha said to him that very, very important mitzvah for the next couple of days is Talmud Torah. You're in an environment which maximizes the need and the ability and the possibility of Talmud Torah and minimizes the possibility of tzedakah. Not a lot of aniyim knocking on doors here. And as well as almost forbids a lot of other mitzvot because Rosh Hashiva doesn't allow. Since you're here and you can't be there. Helping starving children in India is not a mitzvah which you're going to be doing in the next couple of years or months. 4 minutes, and that's apparently, I say apparently, the hachlata of Hashgachat Hashem. For Am Yisrael in general, apparently, kavanos aren't at the moment a mitzvah which is calling to our souls to develop it. Because otherwise, God would give us the opportunity as well as the chiyuv. That doesn't mean, and therefore, now, to answer your question, therefore, it's very possible that even when I scratch my head and try to understand why Kobanot, for instance, could be something which calls upon man to better himself, I won't even understand it, because the fact is that it's very far from me, historically, in years, in place. I've never seen it. And I also trust God. If I'm not being called to do it, apparently it's very far from me in terms of what my soul needs right now. So it's not surprising to me that I don't understand it at all. As I said, you can only understand the next window. If I'm standing over here so I can see the light a foot above my head, the light at the end of the ladder, the light even two stories above the ladder, may very well be, it's all right, it's very, very likely that I will not understand it at all. Why should I? It's not shining for me at the moment. You have to climb 5 stairs to get to the 6th stair. If you try to understand what's on the 6th floor when you're on the 1st floor, it's not that you can't see that far. It doesn't even make any sense. You have to be on the 5th floor for the 6th floor to make sense. That's true in a lot more prosaic areas than Torah. Advanced calculus is not comprehensible if you haven't taken the, whatever the preliminaries for that was. I've managed to forget it, thank God, from the days when I was a math major. I no longer have the faintest idea what I just said. Advanced Cal 1 was the last math course I took, and Baruch Hashem, it was the last math course I took. If anybody here knows what the Bolzano-Weierstrass theorem is, that was the last thing I ever learned in mathematics, and I no longer know what it is. But I know that it convinced me that I shouldn't be studying mathematics. I once mentioned to somebody who didn't know, he said, oh, Bolzano-Weierstrass, that's so important. I said, okay. But I no longer know who Bolzano was Jewish, Weierstrass was not. That's all I know about them. And I have put it behind me. Torah is very complicated. Of course Torah is very complicated. Now obviously what I've just done, I admit there's a trick. What I've just done is I've ensured that I can't be attacked. If you come with me in a shiloh and you say, but I don't understand that, I will say, good! That proves my point. This is a theory which can never be overturned. Because if you understand it, then you agree with me. If you don't understand it, you prove my point. Ani modeh b'ashma. That's really true. That's really true. I remember once saying in a minor application of this theory, I remember a real conversation I once had with somebody who came and said to me that that Shabbos, Shalom Shabbos, but you know, it doesn't work for him. He's bored on Shabbos. Yeah, well, he read the book. He read all these nice books about Shabbos, how beautiful it is. It's full of content, you know, spiritual connection with God. And he's bored out of his mind on Shabbos. He keeps thinking about, this was before they invented computers, so he wasn't thinking about the games and the computers and that. He was thinking, I don't know what he was thinking about, but he's thinking about all things he couldn't do. Maybe they already had video games. He was thinking about the video games he couldn't play. So I had the answer right away. I said, Imreku mikemurek. If you don't have any, there's no tochen, there's no content view for Shabbos, that's because you're a contentless person, not because Shabbos is contentless. Shabbos is addressing a part of your soul which is so stultified, so dried up that you don't even realize you're missing it. It's a great answer. You can't argue with that. What's supposed to say? He's gonna tell me, no, I'm a wonderful person. There's no answer to that. What can I do? I'm right. It's a difficult, unanswerable arguments have a logical flaw, because anybody could offer them. But in this case, what can I do? I'm right. I can't deny the proper spirit. The important point is why I'm right. In other words, what's my justification for saying an answer, saying a theory which can't be overturned? The answer is that I'm making a claim which is in fact very, very, very extreme. The claim is that it's Torah Min HaShemayim. If Torah is not Min HaShemayim, the most famous case of an unimpeachable theory is Freudian psychology. This is well known. It was done in Freud's life already. And Freudian psychology explains, why do you believe this? Because something happened to you in your childhood. So, for instance, Freud wrote a book, it was one of the last books he wrote, explaining, called Moses and Monotheism, explaining why people believe in one God. And he says, you know, when you're a little boy, you have a father, and you have to get away from your father, he dominates you. So eventually you try to get rid of your father, but you need another father, so you invent a God. That's mamash al chatzi regel, not even regel achat, that's al chatzi regel, Moses and Monotheism. So that's a brilliant psychological theory. Someone then said, this was in Freud's lifetime, which is, can only be, he wrote the book 2 years before he died, it had to be very, very quickly. He said, why doesn't Freud believe in God? Because you see, when Freud was a little boy, he had a father. And like many little boys, as is explained in other books by Freud, he didn't like his father. So he had to kill his father. But it's usher to kill your father. So he killed God instead. Now, why would anybody make up that theory about Freud? The answer is, because the guy who made up the theory, well, when he was a little boy, Freudian psychology can never be overturned, because when you argue with it, Freud has an answer to explain why you're arguing with it. You only argue with it because your mother potty trained you in a very, very strict manner, which therefore you don't accept Freudian psychology. And therefore Freudian psychology can never be proven or disproven, because it has an answer by definition, it has an answer for everything. And that's a real chisaron. Why isn't that a chisaron in Yiddishkeit? Because I'm saying, it is a chisaron, but I'm saying the answer is because this Torah is Min HaShemayim, therefore it should be that way. Freudian theory shouldn't be impeachable, but Torah should be unimpeachable, because it's Min HaShemayim. Now, if you find it difficult to accept that it's Min HaShemayim, you have a problem. But that's why it all falls, it all stands and falls on Torah Min HaShemayim. If Torah is not Min HaShemayim, then it's merely a nice book worth reading, worth paying attention to, probably. Most of us, most people in the history of the world have thought so, including people who didn't believe in it, but not to be taken more seriously than that. Surely not to be taken serious about the parts you don't understand. Nor should be understood as something which will, in fact, make you better in an existential sense, bring you up above what you could have been otherwise. You cannot transcend yourself by reading a self-help book by some pop psychologist in America. You can become better adjusted, but you can't transcend yourself. Torah gives you the ability to transcend yourself and to continue to transcend yourself, because it's literally Min HaShemayim. O Shekhen O Shelo, either you accept that or you don't. But once you accept that, then yes, the fact that it appears to be difficult, or parts of it are not understood, or I think any part, when looking back at my advanced age today, I realize that 10 years ago, I didn't understand what I understand today. The curse of some people is they look back and they realize that 10 years ago they did understand things and now they've forgotten them. You know, life is not only the ladder that I described. Sometimes it's always never. It's never the latter I described. It's always like this, and unfortunately, sometimes it's like this. But I can literally say, without any shame, that when I was your age, I was a brilliant student of theology in the prime foremost institute of higher Jewish learning in the world, and I understood a lot of things, but now I realized that I didn't say anything at all. Not because I was wrong, not that my theories then are very good theories, I still use them, but I didn't understand them. I mean, you gain understanding of what you, wherever you stood yesterday, you understand more tomorrow, and that's without any ups and downs. On this, you really true things become more clear the further you go, ad infinitum, ad ein sof. The first ad was in Latin, the second ad was in Hebrew. For those who didn't follow, ad infinitum, ad ein sof. So if it all comes down in the end, is to not a question of do I understand this parasha or do I understand that parasha. That's an interesting thing to do. Just like you understand for good reasons every parasha, you understand for theological reasons every single parasha. But the important question is, why do you have to try to understand every parasha? Is it because it's ahead of you? Or because it should have been on my level? If I don't understand the parasha, is it because it's ahead of me? Or because, wow, that's a real kasha. It should have been understandable by me, because it's about me. The expression you use, dibbeto b'lashon b'nei adam, does that mean that it should be understood by me because it's on my level? Or is the Torah b'chastei Hashem, he wrote in a language which is accessible, but the content is both accessible and non-accessible at the same time. The content is Tzedem Elokim. It starts where you are and it appeals to where you could be, which is Ad Kisei HaKavod, which is forward. What we'll do next week is we'll start to deal with theories of Tamei HaMitzvot. What is the goal of Torah in general? Is it that you should be intelligent, the Rambam, that you should be have a loving relationship with God, Kasa Kreskas, that you should be a super ethical creature, sort of Shifshafael Hirsch? There are different overriding theories of all Tayag Mitzvot, aside from the million theories of each of Tayag Mitzvot. So we'll discuss some of those things and not going to pass them one way or the other, but we'll see how they work and what they hold out, on the assumption that they all agree is that Torah is to make me something which Magia Ad Kisei HaKavod, to provide me with a relationship with the living God, something which cannot exist if you only use natural means, because the gulf between natural means and God is infinite, unless there is something which is itself non-natural, supernatural, like Torah or like Tzedem Elokim, or the combination between two of them, which can bridge the gulf, and that will be the thing which will be common to all the theories which we will examine.